Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everyone is being safe out there. More winter weather moving in last night, adding some snow and some sleet to the mix of an already slick roadway situation. So hope everybody is being as careful and as cautious as they can be. And Joe, we spent a lot of time talking about the Titans so far in the show today. I want to shift the focus to the division right now, and the number one overall pick that everyone expects to be Trevor Lawrence with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, if you ask the experts and you go pretty much one by one, everybody for the most part feels like Trevor Lawrence is the next can't miss guy at the quarterback position. But there is an interesting article on Yahoo Sports that came out yesterday, just kind of surrounding what it looks like with Yahoo Sports or with Trevor Lawrence right now. And June Jones, a former head coach of the Atlanta Falcons and the San Diego Chargers, was interviewed in this piece and is not quite as high on Trevor Lawrence, relatively speaking, as some other quarterbacks in the draft. And it says, quote, "Hey, I do like him, but I would not take him with the first pick, though. Everyone is saying that he's the guy at number one, but I would trade that pick and take one of these other quarterbacks down the line." And June Jones goes on to say, "He's a very talented kid, don't get me wrong, and I think he's a winner, and he can do things that other quarterbacks can't do, such as run. But what I've noticed is when you drop him back and let him throw, let's say a nine route down the field, on those completions that he's had over 20 yards, a lot of times his receivers make great plays on those balls, and they weren't right on the money. They weren't right in stride. The receivers sometimes had to work for the deep ball with him, and that's not what you'd expect from a great quarterback." So, Joe, when you hear those comments there and you hear that maybe Trevor Lawrence is not the number one quarterback in this draft, what do you think about that? Is that somebody just trying to be out and stand out and be different in this? Or do you think there's any validity to maybe Trevor Lawrence isn't just a can't-miss guy that everybody thinks he is?
You just going to bury the lead here like this?
What am I burying?
His number one is Mac Jones. I mean, come on.
I was going to get to that.
Like, Drew Chester's got to be, like, retweeting this every 3 seconds.
Mac Jones, a great thrower of the deep ball.
Yes, yes. He also has Zach Wilson higher than him. I've heard other sentiments like that on Zach Wilson. There's some people who are real high on him. Look, here's what I think about it. No one is a sure thing. I mean, if there's anything we've learned about this league and this position over however long you've been paying attention to it, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, no one is a sure thing. I mean, there have been so many cases of absolute, this is going to be a star player in this league, and it doesn't work out. And there's certainly been cases a lot when it has worked out, and everything in between. But I don't look at Trevor. I mean, I look at Trevor Lawrence like the number one pick. I'd take him number one based on what I've seen, what I know. I just think he's built for it. I think he's accurate. He makes all the throws with the arm strength you need, and he is. I mean, I think in this league now, athleticism at that position is key. I think it's just a big difference maker for you. And, you know, I think the quarterbacks who can extend plays and make big plays out of broken plays are the best quarterbacks in the league. And that's something he can do that some of these other guys, I'll be looking at you, Mac Jones, can't do as well from what we've seen. But is he a sure thing? Heck no. I don't think this is crazy. And also, let me just say this, June Jones, the wonderful offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions, silver stretch run and shoot offense in the late 80s and early 90s. So, you know, actually that was fun to watch. And Barry Sanders in that offense, what a weapon. I mean, weapon in any offense, but with what they did, which was four wide every play, it was a ton of fun to watch it. So I have a special place in my heart for June Jones.
Well, I'm sure you do. And June Jones has a special place in his heart for Mac Jones, apparently, and it's not just because they share the same last name. He goes on in this article to say, quote, "Mac's deep ball accuracy is probably the best that I have graded in my years of coaching quarterbacks. He's at almost 55% at over 20 yards, which is unbelievable. And if you look at the numbers, Jones actually hit 58.9% of his passing attempts last year, 20 plus yards down the field. And according to this article, when you factor in the drop passes, our friends at Pro Football Focus had Jones at an adjusted completion percentage on those attempts at 67.1. So yes, I mean, look, I think if you watch Mac Jones play this past year, his accuracy down the field was pretty impressive. Now, I'll also say this. I think part of the criticism that June Jones is talking about here with Trevor Lawrence and his receivers making good plays on the ball.
Yes.
I mean, you could probably make that argument at Alabama as well when you've got Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith a lot of times running wide open down the field as well. So I hear what they're saying there, and the completion percentage looks great, but there were a whole lot of wide open receivers and wide open routes. And I don't want to take anything away from Mac Jones, but I think Trevor Lawrence is the better quarterback.
I do too. So Mac Jones, I put him in that category that I put, you know, like a Kirk Cousins, like a Jared Goff. And this is, there are quarterbacks that need the right conditions. And if they get them, I think they're very good readers of the defense, throwers of the football. And that's fine. You can win big with a quarterback. You can win a Super Bowl with a quarterback like that if you have the right things around them. But to me, a Trevor Lawrence is someone who, again, elevates you, can take it by himself to a different level because of what he can do athletically. That to me is the difference. And then again, this is a nice headline and it's an interesting discussion with June Jones, but as Eric Edholm, the author of the piece, kind of details, I mean, it's kind of nitpicking when you go deep into the analytics on these guys. Trevor Lawrence does everything well. Doesn't mean he's guaranteed. I think Trevor Lawrence, I'll be surprised if Trevor Lawrence isn't a good quarterback in the NFL. But is he going to justify being the number one overall pick? I mean, I have no idea. You know, I mean, he's not necessarily going to the best place for that. But I just think that what he can do, and again, who's the best quarterback in the league right now? I mean, it's Patrick Mahomes. So that's the standard. I mean, what Mahomes does on his own when plays break down, what Deshaun Watson does, you know, Aaron Rodgers still does that stuff too pretty well at his age. Like, those are the guys that are the top crust at this position in the league right now.
Go to our Josh text Allen line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, of course there's a chance Trevor Lawrence does not succeed in the NFL. Just look at how many mediocre and terrible quarterbacks are in and have been in the NFL. If every quarterback was great, there would never be quarterback discussions. And I think that's a fair point by Nate. Having said all that, like, I watched Trevor Lawrence play, and look, I mean, people have been wrong before. I've got a pretty hard time imagining he's not going to be pretty good at the NFL level. Like, the one part I guess you're scared about right now, if you're, you know, a Clemson fan or if you're a Trevor Lawrence fan, is going to Jacksonville and what I think could be a difficult situation. I mean, obviously, you look at the history of the Jags over the last 15 years. I mean, it's not great, quite frankly, and we'll get into this here in a minute. I don't have a ton of confidence that Urban Meyer is going to work out at the NFL level. So there are some definite concerns there with Trevor Lawrence, especially with the landing spot that he's likely to be going to. But just physically, with the tools that he has, I think he can do anything that you ask him to do. And from that standpoint, I have a hard time imagining him not being a pretty good quarterback in the NFL.
To your point on, you know, him going to the Jags, for anyone out there who was of a certain age, you may remember the 1985 Heisman Trophy race, one of the all-time great races. Bo Jackson, Chuck Long. I firmly believe that Chuck Long could have been one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. He's a guy who's barely a footnote in the NFL. He went to the Detroit Lions. This stuff happens all the time. And he got hurt, okay, but he went to the Detroit Lions. So I think there are a lot of situations in this league where someone who didn't pan out goes somewhere else, and they might have had a great career. Tom Brady goes in the sixth round to someone else. He might have been a four-year clipboard holder. I mean, honestly, you know, he might not have gotten an opportunity. And that's just the reality. It's amazing how much that matters, you know, in the trajectory of a player, and how wide of a range of outcomes I think there are for everybody.
When we come back, we'll continue the conversation in the AFC South and look at the coaching part of this equation. We'll rank the coaches in the AFC South and break down Urban Meyer as well. How do we think this is going to go in Jacksonville with Urban Meyer leading the way? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that opportunity for you coming up later this hour. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, quickly going back to the conversation we had in the last segment surrounding Trevor Lawrence and how he is viewed around the league and how he seems like he's going to be the next can't-miss guy. Nate on Twitter says, did we say the same thing about Tua being successful in the NFL? And it seems like the Dolphins are willing to shop him around at this point. Joe, what do you think about that, the comparison between Tua and Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah, well, I responded on this. Look, I have not heard the Dolphins are quote unquote ready to shop him around. If they're just shopping around, well, then that's one thing, and I think that's silly too. If it's they're willing to package him for Deshaun Watson, well, you need to do that because Deshaun Watson right now has done more than enough to indicate that he's an elite quarterback, and Tua may get there, but we don't know. It's also way too early to know that he won't, and just to shop him around. But as far as I know, that's just the Dolphins getting into the Watson thing, right? Which they would be ridiculously silly not to do.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, and I don't think that's necessarily an indictment on Tua as much as it is. I mean, we know what Deshaun Watson is. I mean, the guy is an absolute stud. So if you're Miami and you've got a chance to get him, I mean, I think that's the route you probably should take. I don't think it says anything about Tua. And who knows, like Tua, I still think based on what I've seen in college and just the throws that he's able to make, if he can stay healthy and he can continue to kind of fight his way through what was, as Trent Dilfer said with us last week, a pretty debilitating injury that he had to battle back from, I still think Tua is going to be pretty good at the NFL level.
Yeah, I do too. Now, health, support, what's around him. Well, these guys are, it's like, let's take it back to the Jared discussion about Tom Brady. You know, the quarterbacks are not as all powerful in their own situation as we want them to be. It's absolutely the most important position, but it's still one of 11. And you're so dependent on so many different things at that position. And I believe absolutely. There's a lot of guys who didn't pan out who would have panned out in other spots. Now, I do think the Dolphins, to me, seem like a team on the rise. They've got a nice defense. They're doing some things around him. And I think he's got the ability. He's got the ability we just talked about in terms of athleticism, extending plays. And, I think his arm talent is special, is elite, elite. Doesn't guarantee anything because he's still, you know, he makes rookie throws for picks. And actually, even at Alabama,
yeah,
he took some chances that really burned him. You think about that first pass in the national championship game against Clemson. That's got to get cleaned up. But if that's your biggest concern, I think those are things that you can clean up. Although Jameis Winston, well into his career, you know, was not cleaning anything up. I mean, Winston and Mariota, there's your great example of two guys that I think a lot of people thought, okay, they're both sure things, just a question of who's going to be better. And now they're both backups in the NFL.
So moving this conversation to the AFC South, kind of looking at the coaches here, because we talked about Trevor Lawrence and the landing spot with Jacksonville and Urban Meyer taking over at the helm there in Jacksonville. As you look at the four head coaches now in the AFC South, and that is Frank Reich, Mike Vrabel, obviously Urban Meyer, and then David Culley, recently hired by the Houston Texans as well. How would you go about ranking those coaches? Where does Urban Meyer fit into the fold, in your opinion? And we'll get into a conversation in more detail about Meyer coming up here in just a few minutes. But I think his fit at the NFL level may be one of the top storylines, not only in this division coming up this next season, but I think in the entire league.
Well, if you want to talk about ranking, I mean, there's two tiers. There's Vrabel and Reich in the top tier, and you know, you can go either way there. I think it's really close. And then there's Culley and Meyer in the second tier. And I think that is too, even though you're talking about, I mean, Cully, an older guy who was not a coordinator, a guy who has a lot of respect around the league, but that's a little bit different. And Urban Meyer, I'm still a bit stunned that he's in the NFL. I never thought that he would opt for the NFL. I don't think he fits in the NFL well. Maybe he'll prove me wrong. But the way he does things, and I'm a lot more familiar with this now after a thing I did last summer on him at Ohio State, because I was writing about, Vrabel and sort of Vrabel's coaching start, and writing about that first year under Urban Meyer at Ohio State, and talked to like a lot of people involved in it, including Urban Meyer for a long time. And he is, he's just, his style is very confrontational. It is very much stand up right now and show me what you're doing on this play to coaches and players. I mean, he is I can go pull up the story. There's some great quotes in there, but it's like basically like every day you're on the edge with him. It's you can never settle. You can never calm down. You can never relax. Player, coach, you are always being tested by him. He is, I mean, it's not hard to imagine that when you look at him, even when he speaks publicly, but apparently behind closed doors, multiply that by 100. Is that going to work in the NFL? I don't know. Probably not. I don't know. I think, now look, is Urban Meyer a smart guy? Sure. Does he understand that you have to change things? I would think so. Although his idiotic choice of strength coach makes me wonder what is going through his head. But
that was not a good start. I would say this. I mean, no. Bringing in Chris Doyle to the fold with everything surrounding him, and we talked about it here on the show with, the alleged racist comments that he made, and it wasn't even just that, as bad as that is. I mean, the bullying that he was accused of as well with some of the recruits and some of the players at Iowa. I mean, it felt exactly like a move that Urban Meyer would make. And, I think some people were expecting Urban Meyer to kind of be this different guy coming to the NFL. And I think, when it breaks down to it, he's going to have to be if he wants to have success at the NFL level. But to me, that was not an encouraging start that Urban Meyer is going to make the changes that I believe are necessary for him to have success at the NFL level. Now, maybe we're wrong, and maybe he can do things the way that he's always done it. He can have that style of coaching, and it works, and it connects with people in Jacksonville. I have no idea. I just find that very difficult to believe that would be the case. I mean, dealing with professional athletes and dealing with college athletes, very different. And that was not an encouraging start on my vantage point for Urban Meyer.
Right. I mean, it was a college mindset hire, because like Chris Doyle, it doesn't surprise me, even with all this crap, even with Iowa paying $1 million to go away. Like, I fully expected some college program out there to be like, hey, the guy he's been one of the most successful strength coaches out there.
Right.
And in college football, that's a big part of your program. It's a big part of it's the coach who's most with your players. It's also, it's a recruiting thing. Now, of course, I would also say, well, be careful. This guy is now toxic, but still, I wouldn't have been surprised if a college program, I won't be now, if Doyle gets another opportunity like that. But in the NFL, like what does that do for you? And so now, like, everybody's just like, why did you bring this dude in after all this stuff happened? I mean, it was stupid talking about vetting him and everything. I mean, so that was a college mindset move. It's funny when I think about Urban Meyer, I think of another Jacksonville figure who actually did make it work. And that is Tom Coughlin, not making it work in his role with the Jags, but Tom Coughlin was one of those super tough, militaristic, rah-rah, in-your-face, disciplined coaches in college. And it, he won two Super Bowls with it with the Giants, or at least it didn't cost him, But I do think that that's also – I just think that's less and less effective. But you got to have a balance. You got to have – I mean, like Mike Vrabel here with the Titans. I think he has a very, very good balance of – I mean, he's going to tell you what he thinks, and there may be some four-letter words, all mixed in with that message. He's not going to hold back, but also the guys really like him, I mean, that's what you got to have. And it's just different with him, too, because there's, like, that respect level of some of these guys still remember him playing in the league. Everybody right. knows he was such a good player. There's nothing like that with like an Urban Meyer. He's going to have to change a ton. And I'm not saying I'm like you. I'm not going to rule out that he could do it. But even like his offense, that's got to change and evolve. Although I do think that Trevor Lawrence is a guy who, with a lot of the stuff that he did like to do in college, Trevor Lawrence could do that stuff well. And there is a lot more college offense trickling up to the NFL these days.
There is, but I mean, I think we've talked about this with Charles Robinson as well from Yahoo Sports. Like, you know, from people that he's talked to and the conversations that you have, like, I think people were starting to, I don't know if figure out's the right word with his offense at Ohio State, because I mean, there's just such a talent advantage at Ohio State that, you know, he was still putting up a lot of points and they were winning a lot of games out there with the offense that he had while he was coaching. So it's not like, you know, people were shutting down Urban Meyer in that offense. But I do think there's got to be some adaptation there that I'm just not convinced that, you know, given the ego that he has, and not just him. I mean, a lot of coaches, especially high-level college football coaches, have got a gigantic ego. It's going to be interesting to me to see how willing or unwilling Urban Meyer is to adapt his offense at the NFL level, because I think that's going to be necessary as well. Like, as much as he likes to have the quarterback run around, and I think Trevor Lawrence is well equipped to do that, like, you also can't get your franchise quarterback killed in the NFL and have him take some shots like you can probably get away with. Like, when you've got, you know, Cardale Jones running around at Ohio State and he's bigger than the linebackers hitting him, probably a different story than in the NFL as well. So it's going to require some adaptation on Urban Meyer's part from that vantage point as well.
Yeah, and look, and I do think of Nick Saban here too. And who knows? I mean, had the Drew Brees thing worked out, Saban might be in the NFL still and have more Lombardis than Belichick. But I think Saban got a dose of, I don't know if I really like this even playing field, draft, all this stuff. I kind of like just flat out having way better players than my opponent every single game. And that has absolutely been Urban Meyer's reality since he left Utah for Florida. Now, he got there by doing great things at Bowling Green in Utah, but it's been a long time since he, as a coach, did not have an almost every single game massive advantage in talent, and that's over for him now.
Coming up next, Joe Rexroad's got something that he would like to get off his chest, and I, for one, am very much looking forward to it. I hope you are as well. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Ryan Porth are with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everyone is being safe out there. The roadways, even more winter weather added to them last night. So the roads look a little rough out there today. Make sure you're being as careful as possible if you have to go out and travel today.
Yes, a lot of interstates have had some backups and accidents this morning, so please be careful.
Joe, I know yesterday, like, I had the bright idea to try to, like, back out of my driveway. And basically, my driveway is at the top of this gigantic hill. And when you get to the bottom of it, whether I go left or I go right, there's also another gigantic hill that I've got to get to the top of. So I knew it was probably a horrible idea from the start. But I made it about, I don't know, 7 feet yesterday before my car started to slide. And the wife and I decided after that it was probably best to just go on foot to the grocery store from there.
Yeah, good decision on your part. I mean, we don't have a hill right by us, but like right out in front of, like, we were in a cul-de-sac, and right out in front of our house, our neighbor actually carved out a skating rink because it's awesome. Just ice. I mean, like, there's the layer of snow, and maybe today, I guess maybe all the snow has helped a little bit with grip, but right underneath that snow is absolute sheen of ice. So yeah, it's just, if you can avoid being out on that stuff at all, avoid it.
Now, there was a cool little drone video photo session yesterday of some people playing, you know, like pond hockey at Centennial Park. It was pretty cool. You don't see that happen a whole lot in Nashville.
Yeah, people are taking advantage. May as well. I mean, in 5 years here for me, there hasn't been anything close to this. So I don't know how, I'm assuming this is once every, what, how many years? About
once every 5 to 6. Yeah, it's not going to happen again for a while, just based on the history of living here my whole life. This very rarely happens 2 years in a row.
Yeah, and also this is it reminds me of my native state, and also reminds me of why I left.
Well, glad we could serve that reminder up for you once every 5 years of what you're missing out on up there in Michigan. Joe, we've spent a lot of time this week talking about your piece on Jerry Stackhouse and kind of the backlash that it got after that, and just what the future looks like for him at Vanderbilt and their basketball program. And we'll get into their game last night here in just a second. But a part of that piece that you put together last week was Jeff Goodman, and he joined Jared's show yesterday on Stillman and Company. And you had some comments that you would like to make and some responses that you'd like to have. So without further ado, I will turn that over to you.
No, I just want to milk it like Jared is. I mean, if Jared can milk this, then I want to milk it too. It's only fair. You know, like Jared, how could – you can't milk this much. We should be milking this. But yeah, and actually it's funny because Jared and I were texting back and forth during his interview with Jeff Goodman yesterday. And at the end, he's like, "You got to tear up this interview tomorrow." I'm like, yeah. I mean, so the one thing about Goodman that – I don't think he understands. Like, Goodman at one point was talking about the article. And look, for anybody listening who doesn't have the background, I don't know if we have time to go through everything, but long story, really short. Wrote a big story about Stackhouse that went on Friday. Some people went nuts over one quote in it that they, to me, took it, they twisted it and made a big deal. Then Stackhouse sort of, you know, basically said it was out of context. And he and I had another conversation. I wrote the full transcript, but Goodman was in the piece ripping him because Jerry was in the piece ripping Goodman, and they've been ripping each other and blocking each other on Twitter or whatever for 2 years. But, you know, Goodman says to Jerry, like, yeah, you know, Joe should have called like 3 or 4 analysts, you know? And I'm like, dude, I didn't call you for your analysis of Stackhouse. I called you because he ripped you. So I was giving you a chance to respond, which he did respond. And frankly, I would agree from the Stackhouse perspective with the idea that if Jeff Goodman, who is quoted saying he doesn't work hard, says that, now where does he get that from? Now, Goodman did respond to that yesterday with Jared, and he said multiple sources have told him that. But that is a cheap shot. It's a cheap shot. So regardless, you know, the point of calling it was because after my interview with Jerry, in which he ripped Goodman, I think, you know, it's important to let someone respond. And also, I think it's important to have balance in something like that. I mean, I get mad every time Jared talks about this too, because he keeps saying, Joe trying to do a favor to Stackhouse, trying to write a puff piece about Stackhouse. No, that's not what it was. It was, the question is, can he win? I don't know. I don't know if he can win. But there are, I think, some things about him that I think are probably made more clear by the piece. And that's the whole point. And I absolutely believe he can coach. We'll see if he can build a team that wins. You know, that's another issue entirely. But yeah, so Jerry gets me mad with that, with the Jerry, you know, Joe's trying to do you a big favor here and write you a big puff piece and puff you up. Like, Jared, this was not 3,800 words of flowers and sunshine, but you know, Jared has a way of getting under my skin. So
you know, you are playing right into the hands of the people on the text line that accuse you of letting Jared get into your head.
I know, man. I know. I tell you what. But I do feel like if he's gonna like go all week with this, then it's like, why, we should probably do a little bit of that too, right?
Well, so, in fairness, he was going to have Jeff Goodman join him Monday, and Jeff rescheduled for yesterday. So that's why it was then brought up again yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not surprised you're defending Jared. That's fine.
Because I always defend him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. He was supposed to have him on earlier, but he didn't have to have the other segment he had talking about the puff piece and et cetera, yesterday. He got at least a half hour out of this, but I don't know. I guess at this point, it should probably all be buried. But yeah, the Stackhouse Goodman dynamic remains very entertaining. That's for sure.
And then on the court last night, Joe, Vanderbilt, just a tough way of going in the first half. Scottie Pippen could not get rolling at all. He figures it out in the second half, but Vanderbilt falls 82-78 to Kentucky last night in a game where they were completely out of it in the first half. They battled their way back in the second half with a chance to win, but ultimately just fell a little bit short last night.
Yeah, it was – I mean, you're talking 0 points, zero assists, five turnovers, a flagrant foul for Scottie Pippen Jr. in the first half. He has 21 points and three assists, but I thought he made about six or seven just incredible passes too in the second half. He dominated the second half. But Dylan Dessou dominated the game, 29 points and 16 rebounds, game of his career so far. Those two guys are special. And Vanderbilt almost won. Jordan Wright has two free throws to potentially win the game, put a ton of pressure on that young, bad Kentucky team by putting them behind in the last seconds and making them make a winning play, but he missed both free throws. Kentucky, 24 of 25 at the foul line. Vanderbilt's free throw defense has got to get way better than this. Jerry, Jeff Goodman should tweet that out. You know, what's wrong with your free throw defense, Stackhouse? But it was a lot of their games have been like this, where they, if you could take out one terrible stretch, they win. And if they just are treading water for the first 10 minutes of the game, I think they were they're their better team for 30 minutes of it, but you can't be down 17. So tough loss. I think there's things to be excited about with this team, but you obviously want more of those wins. And this was a chance to get a streak going after they just thumped Mississippi State Saturday. So now they get to go to Alabama next, which is not necessarily a treat for anyone this year. And also, I sent you guys a video, which Kyle Tucker sent to me, by the way. Kyle Tucker,
yes.
The Athletic, Kentucky beat right. So Calipari Stackhouse, and Calipari kind of gives a wave. Stackhouse, it looked like he was just like, "Nah, get out of here," and like, like waved him away. So maybe we get some Stackhouse Calipari stuff going. Why not?
Why not?
I love it.
Anybody that wants to take some shots at Calipari, I'm cool with. And then on the other side of the state last night, Tennessee gets a 93-73 win against South Carolina. Victor Bailey has a great game. After I texted you about how bad he was playing, ends up with 29 points. Fulkerson, a nice performance last night as well. And then a game in the second half that Tennessee basically just ran away with. Impressive offensively last night for Tennessee against the South Carolina team that, quite frankly, is not very good.
Not very good. And you know, it's interesting because Frank Martin has tried to up-tempo his team this year, and that played right into Tennessee's hands. They are way more comfortable playing that kind of game, even if it's a higher-scoring game. They have a great defense, but they'll play that up and down and be way more effective. And it was huge for Victor Bailey to hit all those shots, 29 points, seven threes. No one's ever hit that many threes for Rick Barnes at Tennessee, by the way. And then Fulkerson to have a big game. Both those guys have been struggling mightily. So that you take Josiah James out with a wrist injury, put those guys playing like that, and that's a good sign. It's a good win. It's a good response to LSU. They're still inconsistent. I don't totally trust them at this point. But when you see this team at its best, I don't see how you could – dismiss the idea of a run in March. They've got the goods to make one. So they should get James back, and I expect him to handle Kentucky on Saturday at home.
Coming up next, it's that time of the day, time for Preds Pick the Click here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The Predators taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight at 6 o'clock, the pregame at 5 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Be the first caller at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, and give us your goal scorer for the game tonight for the Nashville Predators. And if you win, you'll win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
To find the back of the net in tonight's Preds game. Robbie and Rex Road make their picks to click and welcome a listener to do the same. Pick to Click is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, the official vodka of the NHL.
And it is that time of the day, time for Preds Pick to Click here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The Predators taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight at 6 o'clock. Pre-game begins here at 5 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Blue Jackets back in the division. The Predators 2-0 against Columbus so far this season. A bit of a different-looking Columbus team. They played Columbus the first two games. Since then, Patrick Laine is in the fold. Pierre-Luc Dubois is out. So a bit of a different shakeup for this Blue Jackets team, and we'll see if the Predators can get back in the win column tonight as they go on the road. And, you know, it should be the third game of this road trip. It will end up being the first game of the road trip tonight with the two games being postponed in Dallas. So we'll see if the Predators can get back and play a little bit better offensively tonight. And Joe, we had Richard call in on, I guess Tuesday was the day, right before the Predators and Stars game got canceled. And Richard went with Philip Forsberg as his selection. So his pick is going to carry over for tonight's game against Columbus. So with that in mind, I began the other day first. Ryan Porth, would you like to begin today with the first pick of Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka?
Sure. I'll go with Matt Duchene.
Ooh, Matt Duchene.
Going with Matt Duchene, you know, going into his old stomping grounds for, you know, a brief minute. And, you know, he's been close many times this season. I think they're going to put up at least a couple of goals tonight. The Blue Jackets defense has not been good in their last eight games. They've been giving up more than four goals a game. And I think the Preds and Matt Duchene capitalize on a few opportunities tonight.
So Ryan Porth, inspired by the speech that Matt Duchene gave yesterday here on the show about the creativity in the offensive zone, is going with number 95, Matt Duchene, to score in tonight's game. Joe Rexroad, your Preds pick to click for tonight's contest against Columbus would be who?
All right, before I make my pick, now I want to make sure, I mean, I'll get this eventually. We have not picked the same guy as the listener, but that is or isn't allowed, is or isn't discouraged.
It's allowed. You can do whatever you want to do.
But don't you think it should be discouraged?
I mean, it can be discouraged if you want it to be. But if you're a guy like me who has not hit on one of these yet, you do what you got to do.
Okay, so to recap, we have our listener picked
Forsberg.
Philip Forsberg.
Porth picked Duchene. Still Forsberg.
Correct.
Porth picked. See, like, I'm not like, hey, you're going to let me pick before you? I'll take Forsberg, but I'm not going to do it because I just feel like the listener should be able to share or to not have to share the glory of being right about Philip Forsberg. So,
okay.
You know, this is sort of like, you know, it's sort of like playing with proper etiquette, you know, on the golf course or something. So, I will not pick the same pick to click as a listener all year. That is my vow. That is my promise to our listeners who participate in this contest. If you guys want to do that, you go ahead.
Okay.
You want to do.
Do you have a pick?
Would you like me to make an actual pick at some point? I can't get on my soapbox for a while.
You do whatever you want to do, Rex Road.
I will go with Yossi.
I haven't
picked Yossi this year.
Okay.
Yeah, he's good. He's good at hockey. I'll go with Yossi.
So Roman,
that's
Yossi,
great analysis there, Joe.
Thank you.
Yes, I haven't picked him this year. He's good at hockey. I'll just go with the captain. He's good.
Well, Ryan Porth got the strategy of, like, when the chips are down and you need to have a goal, you've picked Yossi this year, going with Duchene today. So Duchene has been selected, Forsberg selected by Richard, Joe Rexroad going with Roman Yossi. I do not share the same principles that Joe Rexroad shares. I need a win in this competition, and because of that, I'm going Philip Forsberg, and I have no shame about it. I'm doing it. I tried that strategy the other day. The game got postponed on me 15 minutes later. I need the game to be played tonight. I need Philip Forsberg to continue to play the way that he has offensively. He has been really the one consistent player so far this season on the offensive side of things. And, you know, I've been shut out too long in this competition. Right now, Rex Road leads it with four. Our listeners have three correct answers. Ryan Porth has one, and I have zero. It, quite frankly, is embarrassing, and I've got to find a way to get on the scoreboard. So with that in mind, no shame about it. I'm going Philip Forsberg as well.
Well, I would like to apologize to Forsberg. I'd like to apologize to our participant. What's our participant's name?
Richard.
Richard. I'd like to apologize to Philip with an F and to Richard with an R, because karma is now going to guarantee that Forsberg comes up empty tonight.
I hope he scores on the first shot, and I'm going to send you an immediate text message.
I know you will. Oh, I know you will. There will be a text going back one way or the other.
So that is today's edition of Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. I would wish you all good luck, but I really only mean it for Richard.
Richard, you and Philip all in the same sinking boat.
Same team tonight for the Nashville Predators. And look, taking on a Columbus team, like I said, Joe, we talked about it in the last hour. Offensively, trying to get something going, trying to get something sparked with this team in the offensive zone. That's been the issue all season long. Dan Hinote talked about it, you know, trying to play with the structure and trying to find that trust in the offensive zone. Matt Duchene said yesterday there's got to be a little bit less of, you know, a robotic element to the team out there, and they just got to go out and make plays. It's fascinating right now trying to watch this team come up with answers offensively. And we've heard about it in practice and how maybe that trust is being built, but it's one thing to do it in practice, one thing to talk about it in practice. It's time for it to translate over to games now.
Yeah, and then does the layoff after the real stinker Saturday against the Red Wings, that help or hurt? I mean, it probably doesn't. I suppose it doesn't hurt to not have to play the Stars, even though they haven't been playing that well, but it just hasn't gone well. Preds obviously beat the Blue Jackets first two games of the season. Looked pretty good doing it. Porth, that's a good stat about, you know, Columbus's, you know, defensive woes. Of course, if you're Columbus, you're probably looking at this like, okay, here's a chance to get better. Here's a chance to get well, the Nashville Predators. So they need to prove that perception wrong. Right now, that perception is reality.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Alex texts in and says, it sounds like the offense is full of system players and a coaching strategy that doesn't have a system. They need to be able to rely on more robotic plays. It doesn't seem like they've got enough talent to just have a blank canvas offensively. Joe, what do you think of that from Alex?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point because I'm sure it's like, I mean, he used the term blank canvas. Is it really a blank canvas? I mean, you know, there are certain, and frankly, there are certain things that transcend system in the way you play hockey, right? In the way that you try to attack, you know, in the way that you go about things on the forecheck. I mean, that phrase did stand out to me because I did think, I was like, maybe they should have less of a blank canvas. Like whenever a team is struggling, like however you describe it, however the team describes what they're doing, you know, your automatic instinct is, okay, well, try something like the opposite of that or something different. But it has been an interesting discussion this week between Duchene and then Hinote. Both of them really good interviews, kind of analyzing their problems. I don't know that I completely understand it, but I do think that sometimes I think Duchene, when he talks about confidence, you know, and let's just go score, I think sometimes it looks that way to me too. Like is overthinking the right way to say it? Just, you know, a half second late. This is what we've talked about with the power play too over the years. Like thinking like, oh, let's make this one play rather than, no, man, shoot. You know, now, of course, if you just shoot every time, that's not going to work either. It's hard to score, you know. I mean, it's hard to score in this sport at this level. And it's like there's just like something that's not quite connecting. Now, do they have it in them to connect and get it rolling? I mean, I do think they still have talent on this team. It's just, it's been a pretty heavy dose now of kind of a lot of frustration watching them try to manufacture 5-on-5 offense.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, is the system set up for the defenseman to shoot and score? It seems different than the past. Is net front presence and screening the goaltender a big part of the system? We're not seeing those two items. Hines' system requires too much thinking rather than playing. And Joe, that goes to your point. It does seem like out there at times that the players have been guilty of maybe thinking a little bit too much, not being able to read and react as quickly as you need to in the offensive zone to generate anything on a consistent basis.
Yeah. I just, but like on the texture there, like is that Hines' system that's causing that or not? I don't know that. You've talked about the difference in system when it comes to defenseman involvement for sure. I do think like in general, like a little bit more of a 20,000 foot view, the Preds have gone from like the change from Trotz to Laviolette was what? It was the, you know, let's get that fire wagon hockey going, right?
Yeah.
Let's start being more offensively minded. And now, when David Poile fired Laviolette last year, it was the discussion has been a lot about let's get back to being hard to play against, which you can read as let's kind of go back to what we were under Trotz. And I know that's way simplistic, but it's kind of I think that's kind of how it feels, and I think that's fair to a point. And you know, then the question is, does this roster fit that? And obviously, they tried to make some changes to make it fit that better, but I don't know that it necessarily suits some of these guys perfectly.
Coming up next, we'll get back into the Tennessee Titans and revisit some comments made earlier this week by Titans general manager John Robinson and how it relates to defensive coordinator Shane Bowen. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.